Hello everybody, Peter Smith again. It's Sunday the 22nd of March 2020, and this is my aged awareness show number 7. Right, the following is another short extract from Dwayne Heppner's book Rebazaar Tars and the Golden Guides, book 7, The Real Side, from his Amazing Romantic Adventures series. Dwayne is being shown some of the darker places and their occupants of the real side by his lady guide Lou. They have just confronted an 8-foot-tall werewolf, master of a veritable dead zone, and Lou has already addressed him by his original name, Alexander, much to the creature's surprise. How could it even be possible that this has happened to me? Yet here I am, and for an untold amount of years that I cannot remember, when I was a person at all. I have dreams and visions of so many things, yet I cannot touch any of them. It would seem that all life is nothing but a bitter hell to live and endure, he said as he sobbed. From the darkness of the lower levels of life, yes, it would seem so, Alexander, but from where we come from there is no darkness, and all life shines real and true. Let me show you, said Lou, as she raised her hand and made the Voo appear as a large screen upon one of the castle walls. The scene opened to where Alexander saw himself as he once was, a fine-looking man in a well-groomed society. During that time, he had accomplished a lot, and was the owner of a huge transportation company that traded with many countries, and so he was very well known around the world. Because of his position, wealth, and place in life, the dark brats took a real interest in him. When they had their agents first approach him, they were very friendly, and it did seem as though they were sincere, until Alexander did some checking through his own sources to discover who these people really were and who they represented. He flat out told them he would have nothing to do with them, as Alexander's family had had the business he was running for generations and built it up greater than any of his ancestors. This is the reason the elites finally sought him out, because of the wealth he had acquired and all the contacts he had. The agents of the dark brats tried several attempts, but Alexander did not give in, so a dark plan by the elites was devised to where he would still be alive, but actually dead at the same time. The dark brats already had thousands of werewolves and vampires all around the earth, so it would be very easy for them to have any of them bite Alexander, as he would then become cursed and obedient, plus the fact that they would turn his three daughters into vampires if he did not do as they say. The story became so that Alexander did not give in, and he was bitten along with the kidnapping of his three young and innocent daughters. Lou showed him the reason for his werewolf situation, as Alexander had been a brutal slave trader in a previous life, with the same alienoids, and made huge amounts of financial wealth. He had tortured many for his own pleasure, as they were prisoners of his will. Now the same alienoids, who kept their memory of all their existence here, knew who Alexander was, as he came into a new life unaware of where he had been with the elites from his past. They now wanted the control of all he had established, as this is how the dark brats work, and plan their schemes while others work to collect their fortunes, but are soon gone from unseen sources which the elites control. Now, you better understand what has cast your fate, as you are not alone, not at all, because there are millions like you here who are ployed by the same alienoids, as each person had established their worth on the earth and other rock worlds. You have free will, and at any given moment you can change your course and be a real captain instead of a bleeding-heart slave to the shadowy bunch. A real life is so much greater than you can ever imagine, but you must decide to set your imagination into an unknown area and test yourself to see what you can do and accomplish, otherwise all you will ever have is this place of doom. You must decide your courage level and go for it, or stay as a bug in the darkness. This is always the test of the lost soul who has been tortured with the ideas of a salvation from someone in the past who will be coming again to fix your life as you sit and wait and read premeditated documents devised from traitors. The real guides of the All Ears are beyond the saviours and saints of material embodiments, and they are always now. Time, as you have been taught and know it, is but an illusion of slavery devised by the alienoids and their make-believe gods of men. I can see that I cannot convince you of anything, as this is not how the true reality is, for it is only what it is, and each one of us must grasp its reality or wander in the fabrications of the lower senses, said Lou. I could plainly see that Alexander did not realise and recognise some of what Lou showed him and told him, but he was so far down the scale of life that it would take a huge focus for him to get through all the karmic endeavours he had created over many lifetimes. You can start your real journey in this very moment, Alexander, but you will be facing unbelievable odds for the longest of times. We will assist you, but you must also assist others like you, said Lou. I don't know. All I see is myself as this monster and nothing else. As I look out over this place of horror, all I see is others like me who are living this same nightmare, he said as he hung his head. You and everyone else in life has an imagination, and it has been filled with far too many images that have confused you. You've been taught that you're only a human or a creature, and now have become a werewolf, a person of some world, in the realms of deep dark space, but this is so untrue. You are a being of light, but only you can unravel the hiddenness of this real truth. There are so many other dimensions right here that you are not seeing. As you have a programmed mind, you are always looking to for answers, which from it real truth will never exist. You will always have your own truths, but they are merely fabrications, like that of anything on the round worlds, and what the dictators have ployed the masses into believing. It is true that it will take you a long time to evolve to even what you once were, but as long as you do not try, then you have already decided not to evolve, but to sink deeper in this mire of a holocaust. All reality is now. This is real and true, so it is always up to you what your life will become. You, like endless others, have been brainwashed into thinking that you need to look to some form of authority, such as those who have seized some sort of power, or the deities that people pray to and worship. Here again is a huge fallacy, contrived by those who are not willing to work for their share, but to use others to harvest what they want, which is always more than they deserve, said Lou. I like what you are saying, but I am so convinced this is all I am, like the hair on this body, this is all I feel, he said. Start watching your dream visions at night. We will assist you as long as you pay attention and are motivated to try and do better. What you have done is affecting a lot of people through so many dimensions, all the way into the material realms. You have a strong tie to the alienoids who rule many of the rock worlds, and it will take great courage on your part to break free. As they always have, the dark rats will threaten you and blackmail you, then destroy you if you do not bend to their demands. The governments of many of the material planets have succumbed to the self-destructive nature of tyrants who will stop at nothing to seize all they can, including the minds and hearts of everyone. The real happiness people are seeking is not with their material embodiments, but from a great and pure perception unlike any human has ever known or read about. The pure reality, the All is far too vast and hidden for anyone in the material senses to imagine it does exist. Here is a reality so wonderful, and there is no worship or petitioning, but a real position that only you can choose for yourself, as you have the right to do so, said Lou. End of quotation. Since early in this life, I've been fascinated by the unknown, and one particular facet of this is an undying interest in cryptozoology, the study of as yet unclassified animals. It has to be said, mainly manifested itself in the hunt for lake monsters, and finding out all I can about these, and their elusive cousin, the so-called great sea serpent. I am perhaps unlikely to ever see alive, or come to that dead specimen of the latter, in this lifetime, and am trying to convince myself that as I am satisfied they exist, It would be greedy of me to expect to see one, as the real universe has generously granted me an irrefutable close-up view in 1977 of the long neck and head of one of their landlocked cousins in Loch Ness. It is a question of severing tap lines to avoid being pulled back to this world, as if by cords, as the Buddhists put it. In so saying, I am not advocating adherence to an earthly religion, but I do consider Buddhism more a way of life than a religion as such. Certainly it has much of use to help us on our battle to shake off the shackles of this physical universe. But that is all. As regards werewolves, I have to say I until recently considered them, along with vampires, apart from the very physical South American bats, a thing of folklore and Hollywood, despite the brave efforts of Lon Chaney and Bela Lugosi to convince us otherwise. However, this was before coming across Duane's fascinating books. The next port of call of Duane and Lou in the passage just quoted concerns a visit to a vampire's castle. This, along with Kevin and Gwen's ardent expeditions to Cannock Chase on the hunt for werewolves, has convinced me it is a whole area I have overlooked, and if I ever find the time to perhaps study in any depth. The big question often posed with regard to unexplained animals is whether they are actually flesh and blood, or in fact not really of this earth, but occasional visitors, much like ghosts, a subject I tentatively touched on in an earlier essay in this series. As regards my one only, albeit spectacular, sighting, the one at Loch Ness, I have always been of the opinion it was a flesh and blood creature. It looked like an animal, and it behaved like an animal. Ergo, it probably was an animal. Others, including the then curator of fishes at the British Natural History Museum, agreed when having seen Gwen's film of it. Unfortunately, many know-all, self-appointed experts who were conspicuous by their absence on the day thought otherwise and have done everything they can to undermine it. Well, that's their loss. For my part, I am truly grateful to the real universe for sharing one of its greatest earthly secrets with Gwen and me, and on other occasions with a small, truth-seeking and largely vilified number of others. Having just read a small but absorbing book about Cannock Chase, I am greatly enthused to accompany Kevin and Gwen's next expedition there, perhaps when the weather improves, after the string of storms we've had recently here, and the almost unbelievable floods resulting in various parts of the UK. It really seems that the dark powers that be are stoking things up for the coming showdown with the human race, what with the horrendous so-called natural disasters and the coronavirus, itself so obviously being a cover-up for the immune system-destroying abomination known as 5G. Cannock Chase appears to be one of the, if not the, most heavily so-called paranormal places in the UK. Apart from werewolves, there have been numerous sightings reported of UFOs, big cats, phantom children, giant snakes and spiders, and weird hybrid creatures like the Pigman. It is a large, mysterious, partly wooded area in Staffordshire, England, and has a somewhat bleak history, including several notorious murder cases in the area. As I mentioned earlier, it has often been considered that many, if not all, oddly misplaced and weird animals, and humans come to that, are actually not indigenous to this plane of existence, but somehow appear here, albeit briefly, in some form of excursion from their own universes, for who knows what reasons. From Duane's writings above quoted, it certainly seems that werewolves and vampires, at the least, more usually inhabit locations on the real side, as opposed to this material physical level. However, many weird hybrid creatures, not only in Cannock Chase, but elsewhere in the world, may be the result of very physical medical experiments, of which there is much evidence available. That great humanitarian, the Soviet leader Joseph Stalin, who murdered 3 or 4 times as many civilians in his camps, etc., as Hitler ever did, apparently ordered one of his top scientists in the field to try to produce an army of mindless ape men, hybrids between men and apes. We are told the scientists failed to achieve this despite several filmed ghoulish experiments with poor helpless monkeys, including transferring heads from one to another, and ended up in one of the aforesaid holiday camps. There are other Island of Dr. Moreau places supposedly in the world, including the USA. As for Cannock Chase, it is believed there may be underground tunnels built by the military, which go out for miles to military nuclear bases, where who knows what other activities may be going on, perhaps even trying to emulate Uncle Joe and his eight-man army. Certainly, there was a report of a convoy of military vehicles going into the woods and then mysteriously disappearing, their tracks in the mud and undergrowth suddenly coming to a dead end. One investigator claims to have dug the earth up around this location and to have struck new concrete. Another pleasantry to be found in the area is a German cemetery holding some 5,000 bodies. It appears there are German servicemen here from both world wars. Many were collected from around the country to centralise them, and the official story goes, to aid relatives to come over and find their loved ones or ancestors. It seems, in fact, many of them died through extreme maltreatment in British concentration camps round and about, including starvation and untreated diseases in World War I. I knew the British invented the concentration camp in the Boer War in Africa, but I hadn't realised they had carried on using them, let alone in the UK. Not something you hear much about, really, is it? There are obviously many things governments keep from us. In fact, the list is probably endless. The UFO cover-up is one good example. There has been so much written and so much TV time about the subject that it is pretty well known, and I don't intend saying much about it here. Save to repeat that Cannock Chase has seen more than its fair share of UFO-related incidents, including abductions. It seems rather a coincidence about the military presence spoken of earlier, since much UFO activity seems to centre on military installations, and I don't believe in coincidences. Of course, as I said before, not all supposed paranormal phenomena at Cannock Chase is exactly that. Sightings of enormous snakes have been reported and may well be escapees, as snake keeping for pets is now big business in the UK like the USA. However, unlike Florida, nowhere in the UK is hot enough for long enough to sustain really large snakes, most likely Burmese pythons, if they are escapees or discarded pets, as they require a temperature ideally around 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Sorry, I'll never get my head around centigrade. For a comfortable survival. And it is significant that when sizable snakes are reported at Cannock Chase, they are not over a very long period. As it is, our only three native species of snake are relatively small and would hardly fit the bill. The longest, the harmless grass snake, rarely exceeding about 4 to 5 feet. The harmless and extremely rare smooth snake and the mildly venomous adder are smaller still, though I've been to many places in the UK where there are supposed to be snakes, even having warning signs up about the adders. I've never had the good fortune in 73 years to see one. However, I have high hopes about my first visit to Cannock Chase, which is supposed to have plenty. Similarly, reports of panthers and similar big cats may well have resulted from the passing of a law a few years back in the UK regarding the needing of licences to keep dangerous predatory animals, when many unscrupulous owners kindly set their carnivorous beasts free in wild places, evidently such as Cannock Chase. We had a Burmese python for many years. When Kevin bought it at a local pet shop, he was assured the then 2 to 3 foot snake was a male and would not get very big. It's only the females that do that. By the time it had outgrown the 6x4x4 vivarium I had made for it in the spare bedroom, and I could drape it over my shoulders such that both ends touched the floor, we had come to the conclusion that he was in fact a she, and could potentially grow well over 20 feet long. Although she was such a docile and beautiful animal, and it was heartbreaking to let her go, we realised it wasn't fair on her to keep her in such nail-cramped conditions, and managed to find a collector who was more than delighted with her. He rang me a few days after collecting her to say he had had her checked out at the local zoo to where he lived, and confirmed she was a female and in excellent condition. She had also been measured and found to be 12 feet long. He was going to breed from her, as he already had a suitable male in his collection. At the time, I have to say, I wasn't aware of the aforementioned law, but though she was certainly a predatory animal, as indicated above, she was very docile, and I never considered her dangerous, although I understand the rule of thumb is that there should always be at least two people present when handling snakes in excess of 8 feet. Clearly, however, she was going to get bigger, and a large constrictor is known to have the strength of 20 men, so discretion probably was the better part of valour in the end, and we parted company while we were still winning. Getting back to government cover-ups, one other I wish to discuss is that concerning free energy. In April 1997, I finally achieved something that was by now top of my bucket list. We went to New York City. A dream I'd had since I was a schoolboy, collecting photographs of the skyscrapers and finding out everything I could about them, until I could identify some 120 buildings in a city 3,000 miles away across a seemingly unpassable giant pond. We were lucky with the weather and had 4 beautiful sunny spring days there. When booking the visit, there had been a choice of several hotels, and I could not believe my luck when one of them turned out to be the magnificent 40-story New Yorker. I had no hesitation in booking it. As high a floor as possible, please. When we got there, it turned out we were on the 28th floor. Since the hotel stands on the northwest corner of 8th Avenue and West 34th Street, I was expecting a breathtaking view of 34th Street, with the neighbouring Nelson Tower and the Empire State Building 3 blocks away. Sadly, we were on the west-facing side, looking out over the Hudson River and New Jersey. The only thing of much interest was what appeared to be a police station, some 330 feet below us, with the continuous comings and goings of blue and whites. This was the second of only 2 disappointments while we were in New York. The first one had been the cars. They all looked much the same as ours. What had happened to all the great chromium-plated dinosaurs? All the time we were there, I only spotted one classic, an elderly Checker cab. Mind you, my main attention was on the buildings, but I did need to look carefully at the streets to cross them and avoid being run over. Everyone was driving on the wrong side of the road. Anyway, you may well be wondering where all this is going. Well, I didn't know at the time, and only found out recently, that no less a personage than the electrical genius Nikola Tesla had spent the last few years, and indeed died, in the New Yorker Hotel up on 33, only 5 floors above where we had stayed. From a recently televised series of programmes about him, it seems he not only lived there, but was influential in its design back in 1928. It apparently opened in 1930. The presenters of the programme were allowed down into the bowels of the building and showed the bottom end of huge square section metal ducts, which apparently ran all the way up to the top, to the roof of the 470-foot-tall building, which from the original blueprints was intended to end in elaborate antennae. The building was in fact to be, perhaps the first in a series, a giant transmitter for his free energy beams, much like the specially constructed tower at Wardenclyffe, where Tesla conducted some of his experiments. In the event, it seems things never got that far, and when he died in 1943, the FBI raided his rooms and made off with, they said afterwards, 30 trunks full of Tesla's papers. Later, the FBI claimed they found nothing of national or military interest, and that for the time being was that. However, the presenters of the program moved to the Tesla Museum in Serbia, where he originally came from, and the curator there insisted that the FBI had sent them all the trunks they had, no doubt without contents they really thought were of interest, and that these numbered 60. We were shown some of them, empty of course. How does this stack up with the FBI's original assertion they only took away 30? Moreover, Tesla himself at some point had made it known he actually had 80 such trunks. curiouser and curiouser. It is known that Tesla was working on not only the possibility of free energy for everybody. JP Morgan the banker and General Electric were not amused and soon put paid to any such nonsense. But his fabled death ray was seriously weighed up, it said, by FDR against the atom bomb in World War II. And we all know which one. It certainly wasn't the Japanese. It is said the death ray would have been able to take out approaching enemy aircraft 500 miles away. It has been suggested that it was tried out on the Siberian location Tunguska in 1908, whose mysterious flattening over a huge area has never been adequately explained. And what of the Twin Towers? I'll leave you to work that one out. Finally, I usually end with a shared dream. If they are familiar, it's because they have usually already been the subject of a UK Skype with Dwayne. The following is no exception, except it was no dream. It happened in the physical. I drove out to visit somebody in a neighbouring town, Bletchley, famous for the wartime codebreakers. At the premises of the person I was going to see, there were rows of parallel parking bays, so I parked in one and clambered out of the car. Walking across the pavement sidewalk, I suddenly seemed to be propelled forward at some speed. It was as if I had been violently pushed, although I felt nothing touch me and there was nobody around anywhere near me. I crashed sideways on into some metal railings running parallel to a building wall and about a foot away from the wall. I ended up on my knees. I smashed against my right arm and seemed momentarily stuck there, unable to move and free my arm, although it was not jammed between the railings but rather positioned diagonally across them. I managed to get up in a bewildered state. I'm sure I had not tripped, and even if I had, I do not believe I would have moved so fast and so forcefully into those railings. Needless to say, my arm was horrendously bruised, black as coal for several days over a large area, and hurt like hell. This event seemed like the culmination of a succession of notably bad days, when nothing much went right, and indeed my office, computer, printer and photocopier all decided to play up or break down. The following day was a notably good one, so I guessed the attack, for that is what I am sure it was over. A few days later, however, the alternator of my car packed up. I think, hope things are now back to normal. We'd been warned that if we accepted the new ideas and started to pursue them, we could expect such things as we were, to say the least, annoying the dark forces, who do not wish us to know of such things. We were also told we could expect protection from the real guides. I believe I was very much protected. I could have broken my arm or even split my head open, which would have been disastrous work-wide and every way, but the real guides managed to prevent such a thing. When I discussed this with Kevin, I mentioned that looking back over my life, then almost 73 years of it, I have always felt protected and looked after by persons or things unknown, whether it be most recently from crazy idiots on the motorways, or a staggeringly near miss from a solid ring of steel or iron that came crashing down from a tall building I was walking past in Luton 4 or 5 years earlier. It missed me by about a yard at most and rolled past me before falling to a halt. If that had hit my head, there can be no doubt it would have taken me out. As I said to Kevin, this was some considerable time before I came across the new you, and he made the point that the real guides mark us out as potential new you material long before we actually come across it. For my part, rather than be put off by what was one of a succession of otherwise truly alarming events over a number of years, I know now why I have always felt protected and helped at various crises in my life. The dark forces behind these cowardly attacks have simply confirmed I am doing the right thing and strengthened my resolve to continue. When I got back to the office, I shouted loudly, "New you," in defiance that day. Oddly, before our Skype started, two of the other new you folk were having a discussion about psychic attacks and comparing notes on their own experiences. Dwayne confirmed we could all expect much of the same, really, as wake-up calls. The real guides will let them happen, but will not allow any serious outcomes to occur. Ending up on my knees symbolised, to the dark forces and my kowtowing to them, but not to worry about that. That's it again for this time. Thank you for listening. Just remains for me to do the new you song. Do you.